The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
One of the great international sports careers by an Irish person was crowned, really, when Zach Toohey hit the milestone of his 200th AFL game at the weekend just passing. I'm delighted to say we have him live on the line from Australia. Zach, good morning, good evening, good afternoon to you. How are you getting on?
Morning, guys. Yeah, not too bad. Stuck in a hotel here like I have been for the last few months, but could be worse.
200 not out. It is an incredible achievement. When you think back on the first time that you arrived over in Australia, what was your intention and what was your dreams at that point?
Well, funnily enough, the first time I came on a 2-week trial back in 2008, I actually hated the experience. I've said this a few times. I didn't like it at all, but that was a very small sample size. And when I did come back home after that trip, I made myself come back because I knew I'd regret it if I didn't. And one of those sliding doors moments that everyone has in their life where if I didn't make myself come back the second and third time, I shudder to think what kind of life or career I would have had. But, you know, the ambition for me has always been to win a premiership. Once you cement yourself as a fairly regular AFL player, the goal has to be to win some silverware. And, I think we're a decent chance. We have been for a couple of years, but hopefully this is the year.
It's a career, I think, that the people here, kind of everybody gets measured against what Jim Steins did. But actually, of the hundreds of Irish lads who go over and go back after their 2-week trial, almost nobody gets to nail down a place and have a really long career. You're the second Irish person in history to hit the 200 mark. What's the key to actually being able to tough it out, do you think?
There's a lot of good fortune involved in not getting injured. I mean, that's kind of stating the obvious, but, you know, being able to string consecutive games together makes the homesickness a lot easier to deal with because you're at the very least playing at the top level. But I'm not sure. The only Irish guys who ever get brought out here are obviously really talented, and a lot of those didn't work out for one reason or another. So the stars seem to align for me. I've enjoyed my time, you know, incredibly from the get-go, really. Once I actually became a listed player after those trials, I've just loved it. And I must admit that the prospect of not like being a career player never really occurred to me. Little bouts of homesickness here and there, but as soon as I signed the contract, I just don't recall ever conceiving that this wouldn't be my long-term job, if you like. So yeah, maybe good fortune's a key.
I think that mindset as well is actually not thinking that I'm here for a set amount of time and just seeing where, being open to whatever the experience actually ends up being. So as far as I know, you've married a native, is that right?
Not yet, but yeah.
Okay, your life partner is a native.
I'm engaged, yeah. I can't get away from her now anyway. I have two kids and everything. She gets happy no matter what.
But you kind of became somebody who was living in Australia as opposed to an Irish person living in an Irish enclave pretty early on. Is that right?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, culturally, it's a very easy place to live. It's quite similar to back home. And I stuck my roots in the ground from a fairly early stage in my career. So, yeah, I've got two Australian kids and an Australian partner. So, yeah, I'm stuck, I think.
All the Toronto fans were very excited when they see a returning star coming to play for them. And obviously, it's a very different story. Is there at some point in your future a season or two seasons or an itch that you need to scratch about playing intercounty for Laois?
Yeah. As I've said this as well all along, you know, I have loved my time here and homesickness hasn't taken me down like it has some other players, but that doesn't mean I don't miss it a lot. And not playing for Port Laois was easily the biggest challenge. And those instances where I did have homesickness, it was almost exclusively because of football and not playing football as opposed to my family. I do have ambition to play for club and county again, as long as my body lets me. And not getting any younger, I am feeling the hits a little bit more than I used to. But as long as I'm physically up to it, I fully intend on putting at least a year side and playing club and county.
And you would inflict the Irish winter on your partner and kids?
she's on to a winner as well, so I wouldn't feel too sorry for her. She's actually quite happy to move home. We've been home at least every other year, and she loves it back there. So there's a good to fair chance, regardless of where I'm playing after my career, that I'll end up back home.
Right. Okay. That's interesting, because you started a podcast recently as well over lockdown, which, you know, the whole world did. But what was the genesis of that? It's kind of it's really interesting. It's not about Aussie rules. It's not about being a sports person. It's about success and failure and leadership and that kind of stuff.
It's exactly it. Yeah, we actually did it last year, and we've been quite slack over lockdown. But look, I'm really interested in this forum and this format. I think it lends itself to far more interesting conversations than, you know, your stock standard, say, radio or whatever. But yeah, I guess through some connections we made in football, we got in touch with some people who've got really interesting stories, and we tried to dip our toe in the podcasting world, as you said, like everyone has. And it was great fun, but we were very conscious not to make it a football podcast. In fact, I love talking about sort of football and the nuance of it amongst friends and teammates, but it bores the living out of me talking about it, sort of, you know, trying to pundit the game and stuff. It just doesn't intrigue me. So I'm far more interested in the people themselves who play it than I am the nuance of the sport. So this was a perfect way for me to see what it's all about.
On that note then, you said something really interesting just a couple of minutes ago about sometimes you shudder to think about what life would have been like if you didn't get back on the plane the second time. When you do have those moments and you are thinking about what that life would have been like, what would you have ended up doing if you'd stayed living and working in Ireland?
It's a good question, and I honestly don't know. So Carlton first got in touch with me, my first club. I think I might have still been in secondary, or I'd only just finished. So from very early into my sort of, after school life, I was only ever going to play football as far as I was concerned, which I'm pretty lucky it worked out. But look, I would have tried to weasel my way into the sports world somehow. There's no doubt about it. And as I said, I found that I love the media side of things and, you know, this type of stuff. I really enjoy it. But if I hadn't gotten the exposure to the media stuff through football, I just don't know what I would have ended up doing, to be perfectly honest. So quite lucky it worked out over here.
Did you have an intention to go to college in Ireland before Carlton said, look, don't worry about that, come on over?
Yeah, but even still, like, you know, upon reflection, I did a year in Carlow. IT did a little course in Portlaoise before I left. But during all that time, I knew I was coming to Australia. So can't honestly say I gave everything to my academic pursuits, which I regret. And I've done some work here since I've gotten here. But I didn't have another career on my mind at that stage. The second they got in touch with me, I was going to be a footballer, and that was it.
Zach, it's interesting that you talk about how you've got no interest in punditry and breaking down the game, because I was going to ask about what attributes are required to actually make an AFL player, especially somebody from Ireland. I guess a more appropriate question is what type of person is required to actually make it in AFL. From your time spent there, what is the answer to that question?
Yeah, I think that is a far more appropriate question now. And even the clubs here, when drafting the Australian guys, put a lot of work into the kind of psychology of the person you're bringing into your club. I don't know. I think they need to be. I think people who aren't really driven to succeed for the right reasons get weaseled out of your club really quickly. I've seen a lot of really talented players come and go, and then I've seen some moderately talented players have stellar careers because of the type of person they are. So talent's important. I don't believe for a second that talent is a myth like some people do. I think it's incredibly important. But yeah, I guess the thing I've always said to any Irish guys who are given the opportunity to come out here is that it isn't a holiday. It's a fantastic living if you can forge a career, and I'm very lucky, but it's not a holiday. It's bloody hard work. And in the first couple of years, you tend to be playing in front of next to nobody on crap ovals, you know, playing on freezing cold mornings. So it's not all rainbows and unicorns. It's bloody hard work if you're coming out.
When you were saying there that AFL teams put a lot of work into psychology, what sort of thing are you talking about there? Because I know, say, in the NBA draft, they actually interview their prospective draft picks as much as watching tape of them playing.
Yeah, all the players here pre-draft get interviewed. That's fairly standard. I think that's been par for the course for quite a while now. And I just think culture is a word that gets, I'm not sure if it's the same back home, but culture gets thrown around a lot here. And nobody's really sure exactly what it means, but at least from what I can tell, it's the values of the people that make up the organization. And if you can somehow find incredibly talented people, because that is important, to have really good values, you'd be amazed at how sustained your success can be, as opposed to just picking the best player who's available. So yeah, they've screened them, obviously physically and medically screened them, but quite a bit of work goes into the background checks of the players before they're drafted, as well as the interviews.
How do you prepare yourself for something like that then, if you are an Irish kid about to go over?
Well, I guess it's probably, the process is a bit different for the Irish guys, I guess. So right. They're first picked on their attributes and whether or not they feel those attributes could translate to AFL. And then I'm sure the club would be in regular contact. And again, it's not that hard, especially these days, to speak to coaches and people involved with any given player to find out what type of personality he has. And I'd be surprised if that wasn't going on with the Irish guys, you know, before they are brought out here as well.
It does seem that someone like Mark O'Connor is well placed to put in a very, very good career in the AFL. I guess we all knew his talents before leaving, but again, you just are never sure if a player is going to make it down there. Is he on that path? Is what we're seeing, what you're seeing on the inside?
Yeah, remarkable. So we have, every club has something called their leadership group in the AFL, and it's a selection of 5-6 players, usually voted for by the rest of the playing group and the coaches, who they feel best represents, you know, the core group of players and the coaches, and they kind of act as a conduit between players and coaches. He's already in our leadership group at our club, and he's only been right here for a few years. It's a remarkable achievement, and it really shouldn't be undersold. But it was pretty obvious with him in particular that he was made of the right stuff when he came out. He's taken very little guidance from me. He's driven his own career incredibly. And like, Geelong's not an easy team to crack into. We are quite strong, and we've been strong for honestly about 15 years. Like, it's a really well-run organization, and he's come straight in and debuted very early, and he's already in the leadership group. So can't really give much more high praise than that at this stage of his career.
I know you said that at some point the plan is to come back, but would there be a plan at some point to go back again and be involved in Australian rules? It's always an interesting career when somebody comes from the outside and sees a couple of different organisations and finishes at an organisation that's really well run, because it means that you've got loads of experience to understand exactly what the strengths and the benefits of a well-run organisation are and what you need to do. And that's a lot of corporate knowledge to not be using in the sports.
Yeah, but I guess a lot of it, I think, especially with the leadership stuff, is highly transferable to even the business world. So I would like to stay involved in sports in some capacity. Not sure I'd be able to be a coach, or at least if I was going to be a coach, I think I'd work closely with younger players, as opposed to any great ambitions of becoming a senior coach. Whereas, for example, I'd love to go back and work with younger teams back in Ireland. I think there's potentially a lot of good I could do back there. Just given the fact that there's not quite as many ex-AFL players in Ireland. I mean, we're 10 for a penny over here. So, I think I'll end up in Ireland post-career. I think I'll end up doing sports. I'll be involved in sports in some capacity, as not just as a player. How that looks exactly, I'm not sure, but I'd be willing to bet it's going to be in Ireland.
That's interesting, because I did a piece recently with Cora Staunton, and she said that in the women's AFL that there's an assigned person within every organisation to look after the the wellness and outside exterior world. And in many cases, that's actually like, what is your job going to be? Because they're obviously part-time and they're not full-time and they can't live off their salaries. And no one is actually going to make enough money from that to live forever. And I presume in the AFL, there's also kind of someone in the organisation whose job it is to kind of go, well, what are you actually going to do after this? So that's not a concern on a day-to-day basis. Have you already put down those plans? Is that something you're already thinking about? Or is it still far enough away that you don't need to make those plans seem too imminent?
Yeah, I'd never say it's far enough away. Those are famous last words, I would have thought. But we have, yeah, PDM, player development managers at every club, and their job is to find out the player's interests outside of football and, you know, through networking within the AFL or within your own club, try and get the blokes into those specific organisations. You'll find a lot of players, for example, a lot of our guys are really interested in real estate and stocks and that type of thing. So they've all been put out into local businesses and given a taste of what that life's like. Again, with the media side of things, they know I'm quite interested in it. So given quite a few opportunities to explore that side of the world. So yeah, every club has those because work-life balance is important now more than ever.
Yeah, and do players automatically see the benefit of it? I'm always interested in that because we've had people come in who were Olympians and the only thing they ever wanted to do was be an Olympian. And you're in the middle of the conversation with them going, and presumably you know this isn't going to last forever. And they're like, no, I've got to exclusively focus on this because that's my goal. And you just have this automatic worry that actually when that happens and you reach the Olympics, there's going to be this crash immediately afterwards, at least in professional sports, there's a big group of people, so there is somebody in the dressing room going, you know, calm down, you need to go and live your life.
Yeah, it's hard though, because you commit so much physically and emotionally to your, you know, your team and your sport, and it is, I mean, I don't know how not to be a footballer. I played when I was 6 or 7 in Port Leash, and I've basically never stopped, and I'm in my 30s now, so there is a part of me, an old school part of me, which thinks I just should ignore it as well, that I've got a couple of years of elite football left and that should be my sole focus, and whatever happens after that, we'll figure it out then. That's probably a naive, silly way of doing it, and I've changed slightly over the last couple of years given my old age. But yeah, it's hard not to. If you've committed your whole life to reaching the pinnacle of whatever sport it is, I'm not sure you want to be listening to somebody talking to you about the end when you're still trying to reach the top. So it's a challenge. But yeah, our guys do buy into it, to answer your question, especially the younger boys. The first to 3 years don't really have a choice. They go through a lot of meetings and do a lot of little courses and stuff to figure out what they're interested in. And then the older guys are kind of given free rein to explore the different areas they want to explore.
Zach, from everything you know, and obviously the difference in the games, is it going to be easy or difficult for Conor McKenna to step straight back into playing Gaelic football?
He never really stopped. If you look at some of his highlights, he very much kept the GAA alive over here. But he is an incredible talent, and the Tyrone people who are excited to have him back should be excited. He's a remarkable player. So I suspect he'll slip straight back in, to be honest. I'd be surprised if there's any teething issues there at all. I get the impression from him, he never really stopped. His love of football back home clearly never left him. In fact, it was probably weighing on his mind for quite a long time. So if I had to put my money on it, I'd say he's going to slide right back into that Tyrone team and have immediate impact.
Jim Stein's made 264 AFL appearances. Is that a target? Is that a real thing in your head?
Not really, no, but 200 wasn't either. My only motivating factor right now is a premiership, and that's kind of been the sole focus for me for a few years since I got to Geelong. It's my fourth season at Geelong, and that's kind of the reason I came here, because they had been a really strong organisation for a long, long time before this. And I wanted to finish my career at a club that could maybe win one. So yeah, it would be nice to get there. I'd love to get as close to him as I possibly could. But that's not really the goal, if I'm perfectly honest.
We were doing some research for this and came across a comment from Kieran Lillis, which I think it might be behind you saying you don't think that those people who say talent is a myth are correct, because it turns out you were pretty talented. He said when we were growing up, whether we were in the snooker hall in Port Leash, out in the back garden where he had a bit of a tennis court, or we were out on the green playing knockabouts, he would school us in every discipline. So obviously this stuff comes a bit naturally to you, Zach.
Slightly charitable, I would have thought, Lillis there. I've always been very sporty. There's no doubt about that. So I am lucky that I've landed myself on the career path I have. But look, talent's not a myth. People say it's all work rate. Well, it's not. You have to still be pretty good. But if you can couple that with the right kind of mindset, you can go places. So, he had me covered in plenty of sports, Lillis did. But it was nice of him to say.
Is he onto something there when he talks about playing multiple disciplines? Does that help you kind of being chameleon-like and going from Gaelic football to AFL seamlessly?
Yeah, potentially. But I mean, the biggest sort of commonality I have in terms of my background and AFL is GAA. So if I was only going to be decent at one thing, it would have been GAA, because the skill set is reasonably similar. So, you know, GAA is a lot quicker, is the big difference, but the hand-eye, the speed, the ball movement, all that stuff's very transferable. So, but yeah, you're right. I guess if you can be good at a few sports, that has to help.
Look, Zach, I made the point, it is one of the great Irish international sports careers. To be 200 not out is a fairly phenomenal achievement. What's the situation with the rest of the season? How curtailed is actually the end of the season going to be? Is it normal? Are all the same structures still in place?
Yeah, well, our season got shortened. So it used to be 22 games in the season and then going to like a knockout finals campaign. It's 17 games now. And we're playing the last game this weekend. And then it's into a traditional finals campaign from there. So we've been in a hub for 12 weeks now, or 11 weeks, I think. So basically we spent, you know, a month over in Perth, and we're in Gold Coast now, and this is basically where every team in the AFL is based, in Gold Coast at the minute. And last round this weekend, and then we're into the real stuff, into the finals campaign. So no crowds, same as back home, same sort of limitations you've seen put on most sports around the world. But we've gotten the season away, which was not always a guarantee. So pretty grateful, really, for the work that's been done.
And you were also pictured on Instagram of meeting the family again after 11 weeks away. Was that just a brief kind of moment, or are they now back in with you as well?
No, they're here now, yeah. So the problem was, initially we were only supposed to go away for a month, but then things worsened in Victoria, where Melbourne is. So we couldn't go back. We had to stay traveling. And for your families to come up, they have to quarantine for a couple of weeks as well before you can see them. So it ended up being, as you said, it was 11 weeks without seeing my kids, which was the biggest challenge easily of, you know, everything we've done this season. But again, we've been looked after fairly well. I'd be hesitant to complain, but the last couple of weeks before I got to see them was tough. So it was nice for them to be here, and fingers crossed everything goes well for us this year and they'll be there to see it now, which is, again, that wasn't always on the card, so very grateful.
Listen, it's been great talking to you, Zach. Continued success, and I've no doubt that whatever happens, defences in Ireland or forwards in Ireland, whenever you make it back to play for Leash, eventually are going to be terrorised. Thanks, man.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So Zach Toohey there with an amazing story. To go from being a teenager in Port Leash to somebody who's put together 200 professional games in the AFL.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.